Welcome to Your Next Mission podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Hello out there, warriors past and present, and your families, and thank you for your service to our great country. Welcome to season 3 of Your Next Mission video podcast, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and family. I'm going to say it every week. We love them too. We have an incredible show for you today. We'll be talking with some great friends as we celebrate Black History Month. And I'm so excited to introduce General Kip Ward, U.S. Army retired. General Ward was the former commanding general for United States Africa Command. And also with us is Command Sergeant Major Tanya Oxendine, U.S. Army retired. Tanya was the former Battalion Command Sergeant Major with the 82nd Airborne Division, currently a passionate advocate for wellness and leadership. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sergeant Major.
Sergeant Major, thank you. It's great to be here with you and the Sergeant Major as well. But SMA, it's wonderful to see you again, too. Thanks for letting me be a part of this great production, sir.
Hoo-ah!
Yes, hoo-ah, Airborne.
I'm pumped up. Hey, we have a lot to talk about today, but before we do that, can each one of you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and sir, we'll start with you.
Well, thanks, SMA. Again, as I said, happy to be here with you. I'm a soldier, first and foremost. I wore the cloth of our nation for over 40 years. An infantryman, serving at every level, and I enjoyed it. I loved it. I'm thankful that my family was with me that entire time, other than my combat and hazardous duty tours. My trophy bride, my wife, we've been married almost 52 years, and she's been a staunch supporter of families and advocate for children and over the entire time. And I'm just so fortunate to have had her as a partner by my side for that entire time.
Well,
love being a soldier, still stay connected to my soldiers. And those command tours, be they jumping out of a plane or riding in a recognized formation or serving on staff, wherever they may have been, I've just enjoyed it and been proud to serve.
There you go, sir. Well, you know, two things. One is that I always tell everybody that, you know, I had 36 years, and anybody less than that, I always say you're a quitter, but you had 40, so I can't say that. And the second thing is you've been married 52 years. I'll be married 52 years here in about a week. So congratulations. I'm trying to catch up. I don't think I ever will, but I'm trying to catch up. Sergeant Major, would you tell the audience about yourself?
Yes, sir. Again, thank you for having me here. It is such a pleasure. First, Sergeant Major, let me say this. I'm so doggone retired. I am retired. I live a wonderful life here. I get to live in sunny Tampa, Florida. I have two adult sons. My oldest is 35, and we call him Nuke. And my youngest is 30, and we call him Bam. I have a 12-year-old granddaughter and a slew of nieces and nephews. Just recently here, a little over a year ago, my brother moved in with me, and he adores his 9-year-old little niece. And I know some of y'all in the audience are like 35, 30, and 9. Yep, I got a 9-year-old little girl. And another shocker is she has blonde hair and these golden colored eyes, and we call her Cookie. Now, Cookie is my little labradoodle doggy. Yes. Well, anyway, I served a stellar almost 30-year career in the United States Army. I earned the highest promotion for my field, and I had a slew of leadership positions from drill sergeant, served in the 82nd Airborne Division as a master paratrooper, jumped out of perfectly good airplanes. Yep. deployed to both Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, served again with the highest title of Command Sergeant Major, leading over 1,500 soldiers. Love my country, love what I did, love taking care of soldiers and leading and serving.
Well, God bless you. You know, I've got a lot in common with both of you right there. But hey, it's sort of the theme for us this year's Black History Month is Black resistance. At face value, that sounds, a bit negative. But when you dig down a little bit deeper, it really means that Black people throughout history have had to resist to achieve triumphs, success, and progress. That's especially true when it comes to ending slavery, increasing political representation, and desegregation of schools, and the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And that's just some of the strides that we've been made. Considering this, I'm sure that the history of Black America has a special meaning for you. Can you talk about that and how that really shaped your life?
Well, I will, Sergeant Major, OSMA. You know, two things come to mind when we think about Black history and what it means for me and really for everyone. And the two words are, for me, one is inspire and exposure. Because when you have something that you can look at, hear about, understand, that inspires you to move forward, then I think that's golden for all of us. You don't get that if you haven't been somehow exposed to it. Black history, when it began in the 1920s, Carter G. Woodson was designed to do one thing, and that is to allow more of America to know more about what Americans of African descent had done when it comes to building this nation. And through that additional understanding and experience, you get inspiration to, one, do things for yourself, things that you can do, but also an inspiration because you know that your fellow citizens have also played a substantial, significant role in the building of this great nation. So for me, when it comes to Black history, it's about, one, being exposed to things that you otherwise would not have been aware of. And through that exposure, you then become inspired to, one, achieve, but also inspire to recognize to a higher degree the worth, the value, the contributions of your fellow Americans.
Yeah. So, Sergeant Major, same question. How does that, how does that shape your life? Black history much shaped your life?
Yeah, great question, Sergeant Major. So for me, Black history is not just, about Black history, it's American history. And it shaped my life because it represents influence. It's an opportunity to reflect on our ancestors and reflect on what's happening now and those voices who led the way. It's also about telling the story of things that that we don't get to talk about, that's not taught in our history books, and that may be overlooked in our history books. So if you can imagine, sometimes the iconic movements of the civil rights movement, we think about the march on from Selma to Montgomery. We think about lunch counter sit-ins or bus boycotts across the country. But what about, when white police officers were attacking Black beach goers or attacking Black people who swam in local swimming pools? I'm from St. Augustine, Florida, so I'm going to talk about St. Augustine, Florida a little bit here today. So back in the 1950s and 60s, long before I was born, but not too long. I was born in 66. But St. Augustine, it was one of the most critical campaigns in the movement to desegregate the United States. White people did not like the idea of sharing water, the idea that something that touched us was going to touch them. And separate beaches and pools were established for Black people, but they were often, small and polluted, and it was unequal access. And so that's how the Wade-ins, W-A-D-I-N-S, Wade-ins were born. And Wade-ins were really a spinoff from nonviolent lunch counter sit-ins. So the movement in St. Augustine started when this local dentist named Robert Halen reached out to Dr. Martin Luther King, and a series of demonstrations began at that point. Jackie Robinson was also part of that, part of those rallies in St. Augustine. So bottom line, to make a long story short, I don't want to, unless we have the time, because this story really intrigued me when I found out that I was going to be a part of this. I wanted to do something a little bit more than what I've read, all the time in the Black history books. And I wanted to do something that was close to home with me being from St. Augustine, Florida, which is the oldest city in the nation anyway. So even more history. In 1964, some white protesters who was part of the movement, they checked into Monson Motor Lodge, and it was owned by James Brock. He was a white man, And those those white protesters, they invited some black guests in to wade into the pool and swim in the pool. But James Brock came out with a jug, a huge jug of this hydrochloric acid, and started pouring it in the pool and pouring it on the demonstrators. And again, this moment was monumental in our civil rights history. And from that and some other things, of course, that influenced the Civil Rights Act was passed.
Yeah.
Some things continued to happen, even though the wait-ins were still going on. And, you know, a lot of white people didn't want that to happen. And, you know, back then they had signs that said white people only. Well, they changed the signs at, you know, pools and things like that to say private club. And, you know, they raised the fees so that, you know, black people couldn't attend those places. And some of that has still been going on. It remains a battleground for us today, the beaches and pools still to this day. In 2009 in Pennsylvania, black kids were kicked out of a pool that they had rented. In 2015 in Texas, residents called the police on residents there, black residents who were enjoying the pool that day. The neighborhood pool. And just here recently, a few years ago, in 2020 in North Carolina, a white hotel manager called the police on a black family that was using the pool during their stay here. So, you know, again, it's Black History Month is here, even like what General Ward said, you know, inspiring and influencing people that we do matter. Black lives matter, and we have to keep moving the ball forward to ensure that we are always guaranteed equal social opportunities and equal protection under the law.
Yeah, it's ironic for me because, you know, when I grew up, there was, of course, there was minorities. I lived on the West Coast. There was minorities that lived around me. But I didn't look at them like anybody else. I mean, they're just different, not different, but we was both little kids. We both played together. And,
right.
And sometimes it bothers me that, you know, it seems like we take two steps forward and one step back sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that I wish that everybody could really be like the military. The military really mm-hmm. is a melting pot. I told somebody last year we did the show, and I said, not once in my life have I ever asked somebody what color they was that was in when I was in war, that was to my left or right. I don't care. I just want to do your job. I want everybody to do their job. And I think mm-hmm. the problem we have is, and we'll talk about it in just a second, but the problem we have is we don't learn about each other, and we should mm-hmm. learn more about each other. So I think that's why we're having this show today, to talk about things or differences and maybe educate people a little bit more. Sir, to follow up, would you talk about some of the great Americans who have gone before us and the impact they've had on this country? And I can think of a couple myself when I think about General Powell. You know, he was, I met him the first time when I was a sergeant first class. And of course you can talk about the Secretary of Defense in Austin. There's a lot of people, but who do you look up to? I guess who probably mentored you a little bit as you're growing up?
Well, you know, SMA, that's great because I believe each of us has in our life someone who we've always admired, looked up to, you know them personally,
yeah.
or we've read about them, or we've heard stories about them. You clearly mentioned names that are very familiar to many Americans
yeah.
With respect to moving forward. Many of those names are names that many Americans know. Tuskegee Airmen, as an example. Dr. Charles Drew, who discovered blood plasma, as an example, who, even though he discovered blood plasma, got sick and then went to be treated at a hospital where his discovery could save him, but because he was a Black American, he was denied that treatment. How ironic is that? Someone like the inventor of the stoplight, the traffic light that we have, Garrett Morgan, you know, the air brake system on trucks and trains. So things that we use every day are there. You come closer to home and personally, someone like Charles Young, now Brigadier General Charles Young, but then Colonel Charles Young, who West Point graduate, ostracized his entire time at West Point, World War I, denied service in World War I because the War Department at the time knew that, well, if he goes to Europe in World War I, then he'll be put in charge of white troops, so therefore he won't go to Europe, and being discharged from the service from the Army because he was said, well, you're not physically fit for duty. So to prove that was not an accurate statement, he gets on a horse in Wilberforce, Ohio, and rides a horse 498 miles from Wilberforce, Ohio to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Now, I'm not a horseman, but I've ridden a horse. And to be on that horse for almost 500 miles, you got to be pretty stout in your ability to do things. you being a calf guy, I know you know about getting on some horses too.
That's absolutely.
So men like that that I know, and then women, the women of the 6888 Postal Battalion in World War II, who all black unit of women who form an organization to clear up the backlog of mail for soldiers serving in Europe in World War II. Now, we know how important mail is to morale, to readiness, et cetera. And the mission was that, well, this can't be done, and it'll take 3 years to get this backlog of mail sorted out. And this battalion of black women go and do it in 6 months. You don't hear a lot about them today, although it's been a bit more recognized because these things are because of black history, they've been exposed to it. Another group, the Triple Nickels, the 555 Parachute Infantry Regiment. When I was a paratrooper, young paratrooper in 1971, 72, 73 in the 82nd Airborne Division, I heard about this organization, but I didn't know a lot about it. And, you know, it took me almost 20 years later to finally meet one of those original men, First Sergeant Walter Morris, the first sergeant of that platoon of the first black paratroopers in 1943, down there at Fort Benning. He's there, the first sergeant of a service company, doing all the orderly things on Fort Benning. And he's watching white soldiers go through jump school and said, wow, well, we can do that too. And he assembles a group of about 40 soldiers, and he's mimicking the training. He sees what's going on, and so he's doing the same thing, and he gets an opportunity to bring these soldiers together and let's see what they can do, and they become the first black paratroopers, the Triple Nickels. Obviously, the Army still segregated at the time, so the 82nd Airborne Division, the 101st Airborne Division said, well, they can't come into these outfits because we're a segregated army. So you have this group of black trained paratroopers, and I'm meeting First Sergeant Walter Morris there in 1996 or 7, I believe, when I was assistant division commander in 82nd. And I'm talking to this man, and I'm just as my jaw is dropping as I'm listening to these stories. And so, First Sergeant, what did you do? I mean, what, you couldn't go serve in the 82nd? He said, that General, what we did, the U.S. Forest Service, said, we've got these paratroopers. He didn't say black. We have these paratroopers that the Army can't use. Now, at the time, you know, the Japanese were floating incendiary bombs across the Pacific to set fires in the great northwest of the United States of America, forest fires. And as it turned out, these Triple Nickel paratroopers were seconded to the U.S. Forest Service to jump into trees, set on fire to fight forest fires. Now, when I was a paratrooper, I was trying to stay out of trees. And these men were jumping in the trees.
Yeah.
And not only they were jumping in the trees that were on fire.
Yeah.
And they designed their own, the equipment that was used, the cage, face coverings, and all. They designed that and themselves to do that. And as it turns out, the first black man or the first person killed because of the fighting on the soil of America was Private Malvin Brown, a black American, part of the Triple Nickels, who died while jumping into one of these forest fires on the West Coast. And so it's those sorts of stories that when I hear about them, that inspire me. And obviously, the luminaries that we hear, those names, those are all well-known names. As you mentioned, obviously, Colin Powell, our current Secretary of Defense, obviously, but names before, the names that we called and mentioned. But when I hear names like Malvin Brown and the Triple Nickels, I said, you know, these are the things that tell you that, yes, we have served, and they've served with distinction, with dignity, with honor, and they've served in ways that and not always recognized. And so when you have this period of time that you can recognize and you can understand and you can hear about that type of service, you say to yourself, my goodness gracious, yes, there have been contributions made to our great nation by all of its citizens, all of its citizens. And through these programs, through these activities, we get a chance to hear about them, be inspired by them, influenced by them, and to go on to achieve greater excellence. And one of the things that I use as a motto when I talk to youngsters, I talk about being exposed to things, but I say to them, if you see it and you believe it, then you too can achieve it. And when you create that type of attitude within yourself, there's no limit to the successes that we can enjoy as a team, because we all contribute in some mighty, mighty ways to the team. And I know, as I've heard you say on many, many occasions, it doesn't matter what your rank is, what your position is. If the job exists, then there's a need for it. There's a need for it to ensure the success of the team. Yeah. You know, just like Dory Miller there in World War II. I mean, he's a cook on a battleship. But when the need came, he manned that anti-aircraft gun and did his job. And to your point, it doesn't matter what you look like. We just want someone that's doing their job. And the point of Black history observance is to say that, yes, Americans of Black and African descent have also done the job. And that recognition now makes us all better, and quite candidly, makes us better appreciate each other. And through, we have a country that lives up to what it's designed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about so many different things. But I was really thinking about leaders that inspired me when I was a young soldier. Like, I remember the first time I met General Powell, I was a sergeant first class, and I was really at odd. And I wish our country could be like the military. The military is really a good melting pot where everybody comes together and they don't worry about color. They worry about who's in charge. I mean, who can do the job? What can get done? And I think we've made great strides in our country too, and of course in the military. And it's sometimes hard for me to fully understand why we have issues and why we haven't fixed these problems in a long time. Some of the problems I think we've fixed, but we still have to go a long way to fix a lot more stuff, I guess. But it's sad sometimes that I don't care if we educate people about white history, about Black history, about Spanish history, about whatever, but we need to learn about each other, the likes and dislikes, and be respectful to each other. And I, like I said, I've known you for a long time, and you've always been very respectful, not to everybody, you know. And that's why certainly I call you a friend, and that's really good. But we need more people like you out there, telling people, teaching people, communicating with people, and talking about the history. And I think that's really important. Sergeant Major, we spoke, during our prep call about taking care of people. Can you elaborate on that and on that a bit? And it's so important for us to talk about Black History Month for you also. So,
Yes, Sergeant Major. First, I want to take what General Warren reminded me. No shade, sir, but my grandmama, I'm telling you, because he said, my goodness gracious. He said, my goodness gracious. So I'm going to start my this answer off with that. My goodness gracious. You know, I'm getting chill bumps sitting here doing this morning, because I'm learning so much, and I'm hoping that your audience is learning so much. But my goodness gracious, it's important to me to take care of people because of people like, and I don't want to get emotional, I'm going to go back to St. Augustine, Florida again. Oh, man. Man.
It's all right. We know you feel it, man. We know you feel it.
Yeah, you know, because I never knew this. And I feel a little ashamed, right? Because I did not know this. Where I lived in St. Augustine, Florida, was less than a block from where this man's business is now, his family's business, and it's the Chase Funeral Home. And I, you know, live right down the street from Chase Funeral Home. But it's important to me to take care of people because of people like 23-year-old Leo C. Chase Jr. of St. Augustine, Florida. Again, that's my hometown. And Leo C. Chase was the first man from St. Johns County to be killed in the Vietnam War on November 15th, 1965. Private First Class Leo C. Chase Jr. is a Black American hero. He showed courage in the face of battle for our country and for our freedom. PFC Chase was only 5 days away from finishing his tour in Vietnam when he and his other troops were, you know, airlifted to South Vietnam, where he lost his life. He was a rifleman with Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 7th Cavalry. The battle in the I Train Valley. Now, some of y'all probably know that that's been dramatized in the book and in the film, We Were Soldiers. So Private First Class Chase, you know, he and his battle buddies, they flew into the landing zone X-ray at I Train near the Cambodian border, and the helicopter, the troops were immediately attacked by thousands of soldiers in the battle that lasted 4 days. They were outnumbered 10 to 1, all while taking enemy fire from snipers. And in the end, Chase and many of his battle buddies and his platoon members lost their lives, but not without accomplishing their objective, right? So the American lines, our American lines were held because of the courage and sheer determination of 7th Cavalry. And we want to remember the life and legacy of Private Leo C. Chase. So taking care of people is my duty. Taking care of people is my obligation. And taking care of people is my responsibility. It's to lead them and inspire them and motivate them. And although I'm retired, I still serve my veterans and my fellow service members. I'm a part of the Wounded Warrior Project, where I'm currently a spokesperson and an outspoken advocate for mental health, for physical health, and for military sexual trauma. And I get to travel the world here now and share my story and experiences and other stories and bring awareness to the services and programs that Wounded Warrior Project offers our wounded warriors. And I'm proud to say that on June 22nd, 2021, the doors of the Leo C. Chase Jr. Veterans Administration Clinic was opened in St. Augustine, Florida. That man fought and died for our country. So now all who enter will know his name and his story. So that's why taking care of people is critical, because we never know, and we don't want those sacrifices to be forgotten. Just like the sacrifices and the stories that General Warrant just talked about, General Powell and our current Secretary of Defense and the people in the medical field and the Triple Nickel and Private Melvin Brown. And so we don't want those people to be forgotten. That's why Black history is important. That's why it's important to take care of people.
Yeah. You know, as you talk a lot, I'm sure that both of you are mentors to a lot of people, and sit down and talk to people all the time about coaching and teaching and developing. So God bless you for what you both are doing, what you continue to do. I know, General Ward, you mentored me a whole bunch throughout my military career, so I certainly appreciate that. We're talking with General Kip Ward and Command Sergeant Major retired Tanya Oxendine about Black History Month. And you're watching your next mission video podcast with me, Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And don't forget, if you're enjoying this discussion, I know that you are, because I certainly am, please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. Sir Sergeant Major, during this segment, I want to talk with each of you about how we elevate people's understanding of different cultures and to be more aware of the issues that they face. How can we create a better appreciation for this awareness? Sir, we'll start with you. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks, SMA. During one of my Pentagon tours, there was a chief of staff of the Army who would say something that struck me. And the sergeant major, I believe you would know exactly what I'm talking about here, because I believe you were there at the time. He would say, the intellectual precedes the physical. And that was General Gordon Sullivan.
Yeah, yeah.
And General, and when he first said it, it was hard. I didn't quite get the meaning, but the point that he was making, you have to think about things in a certain way for that thought process to then begin to influence your behavior, your actions, your attitudes, et cetera. And that notion of intellectual thought preceding the physical actions and changes just resonated with me. And when you look at learning in general, reading, understanding, those are the has caused you to think about things in a different way. And to your point, SMA, just as it's when we were in our combat formations in our units, it's about getting the job done, but it's also about how you know your buddy.
Yeah.
How you know your battle buddy. What is it you know about it? It's kind of what's going on today in a sense. Building relationships. Because when you build relationships and you understand people, you understand one another, it causes you to change in so many different ways. You know, I appreciate your comment about me mentoring you. You mentored me because I've learned from you. I've learned from so many folks. I've learned from in my formations. I've learned from those who I've worked for. I've learned from those who work for me. I can recall as a young lieutenant, I'm in a field exercise and we're out on a bivouac and my platoon sergeant, you know, there's some folks you never forget.
Yeah.
You never forget your platoon sergeant, especially your first platoon sergeant. And my platoon sergeant, we're in this, and in those days, we're still digging foxholes, SMA. And Sergeant Major, we were digging foxholes. They weren't fighting positions. They weren't depew fighting positions. They were just foxholes. So, so we were digging this foxhole and out on this field exercise, and it's over. And we were, in those days, the defensive perimeter, landline, wire being strung, yeah. You're 312, you're cranking it up. So, I mean, I you don't know anything about this stuff. You know, you plug it. But and the company commander calls me and says, Lieutenant Ward, the field problem is over. And the first sergeant will be getting back to you on how we're going to redeploy back to garrison that a little while. So I hang up the field phone and take off my, wasn't a Kevlar SMA, it was a steel pot. And that steel pot, we did everything in. I mean, we drank out of it, we cooked in it. If needed be, we would use it for other purposes, but that steel pot. So I took off my steel pot, put it on the parapet of the foxhole, put my, I think I was still carrying an M1 in those days. It might not have been an M14. I think it might have even been an M1. But it might have been an M14, but I put my rifle on the parapet of the foxhole, and platoon sergeant Gordy said, "What you doing, Lieutenant?" I said, "I don't know what I said exactly, but something to the tune of, I'm chilling. Team Sergeant, said, no, sir. As long as we occupy this foxhole, we're going to work. We're going to keep on working to improve it." And I said, well, the field problem is over. We're ready to go back in. But he was teaching me not just about the physical part of that. He was teaching me about as long as you occupy a position. And the foxhole was the symbolic position that we were in. But you always work to make that position better every day, yeah, to improve that foxhole. And I kind of took that through my entire career. And my foxhole was sometimes out on the Yamas of Korea or the sand dunes or the ice crevices of Alaska or the Kahukus in Hawaii. But wherever I was, the halls of the Pentagon, my offices there and the joint staff and whatnot, it doesn't matter where they were. Those combatant commands I was a part of, my time in Israel as the U.S. security coordinator, wherever I was, that was my foxhole. And as long as I was in it, I'm working to improve it. But in each position, there was one common element. How do I better understand what type of relationships am I building with my teammates? So that through those relationships, I understand them better, understand each other better, and we can get the job done more effectively because we know each other, we trust each other, we depend upon each other, and we get the mission done. So in all of this, it's about relationships. It's about how you build relationships and get to know your teammate. And so that piece of it, for me, is the critical, essential thing. And what we are going through right now with this observance of the contributions of Black Americans to American history is building relationships. We're getting to know better each other. And through that, we become better teammates. And through becoming better teammates, we trust each other and become, and that trust leads to greater success and mission accomplishment. Yeah.
I don't know how you could be a leader of any formation in the military and not know your people. And it really, it breaks down to, you know, if I'm going to lead you or I'm going to take you to war, I mean, I want to know what your capabilities are, what you can do, what you can't do, what I need to depend on you for. I mean, so as a leader, when I was just talking, I think, geez, how could I, it doesn't matter, again, it doesn't matter what color you are. I just want to know what you're capable of, like, what makes you tick? How do I motivate you? How do I get the best out of you? Because I always looked at soldiers and that I ever worked with in the military is I want to make sure I move you to another level. How do I prepare you to be a first sergeant or commander? Yeah, and you said it a minute ago, coaching and teaching wasn't just for non-commissioned officers. It was for officers too. And how do I develop them to be the best that they can be? Sergeant Major, do you want to add anything to what General Ward said?
I think we're saying the same common theme here with, you know, particularly, you know, just taking care of people and getting to know them better. I have a, you know, with Wounded Warrior Project being a spokesperson, I have a, we have some training coming up and I love hands-on. So I have some hands-on getting to know each other, getting to know our team. I'll be in charge of some leadership training for this particular training. And I cannot wait to present that to them, taking, you know, everything I learned from the military and doing this hands-on training with them. So as we're talking now, so we can get to know our team, because not just our small teams, but even our United States of America teams, all of us, we don't know each other and don't really realize, I don't think, that we have more in common than not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a sergeant, when I went up to be the Sergeant Major of the Army, I had an admin sergeant, her name was Sergeant Snipes. I don't know if you ever met her before. But she, in fact, she worked in the Secretary of Defense's office or one of them up in the Pentagon. But when I got selected to move up to the Pentagon, she was filling out some kind of form. And she said, Sergeant Major, can I ask you a question? I said, what's that? She says, on this form, it says white, black, or other. Why can't it just say American? You know, and I thought to myself, I don't know. That's what I told her. I said, geez, I don't know. Maybe it should just say, maybe that's the direction that we should go in life. It just say American and just leave it at that. And I think maybe that'd help some people anyway. So, Sir, Sergeant Major, we're gonna take a quick break. So don't go anywhere. We have a lot more to talk about. So don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast.
You're watching Your Next Mission, proudly presented by The Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at purdueglobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with General Retired Kip Ward and Command Sergeant Major Retired Tanya Oxendine, and as we celebrate Black History Month. And I want all of our viewers to reach out to directly. Tell us about your transition. Tell us what topics you like as a cover. You know, I always tell people it's not my show, it's our show. So tell us what you want us to talk about. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134, and I'll actually reach back out to you. Or send an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Sir, Sergeant Major, you know, this is sad to me, but we're heading into our final segment with you both, and I hope you've enjoyed it just as much as I have. I'd like to focus this last segment on your feeling about racial equality, especially in the outpouring of support for diversity and inclusion. Sir, we talked a lot. We talked about some of the changes that had happened throughout history. What changes would you like to see in the future? I mean, I know there's been a lot of changes that occur, but is there something that we missed? Is there some other changes that you wish that would we'd fix here?
Well, SMA, thanks for that. And I guess one of the things that I think about is we can't look at what we want to change in the future until we certainly understand what's gone on before us as well, and point that you made. And so for me, I always reflect on, okay, what has happened? What has gone on? And because to be sure, we aren't where we were 100 years ago, but to be sure, as you pointed out, there's still room to grow. There's still, because it goes back to my point before about improving the foxhole. We can always make things better. If we get to a point where we think we've done it all, that's when we better watch out, because it's about to fall. So as I look at where we have been, that kind of drives my thought on where we go forward. I mentioned the triple nickels. Obviously, we had 19, the Truman Executive Order that desegregated the forces. That's a big deal. We have the various acts, legislative acts that took place in 1964 with the Civil Rights Act, in 1965 with the Voting Rights Act. Those are all big deals. And they were big deals for me because of, I'm going to take a bit of Sergeant Major Tanya's lesson here, because I've got a personal story as well. My dad was a World War II veteran, Richard Ward, a combat engineer in the Second World War, guy of the Army, Sergeant Richard Ward, drafted in 1942 or 43, I believe, right out of high school, and served in a segregated army in the Pacific for 2 years. He would talk to me about writing letters and never seeing them there in the Pacific. He was a combat engineer, built PSP runways for our planes, all those sorts of things. But when my dad separated from the army in 1946, he was from Bedford, Virginia. And Bedford, Virginia, you may know that name, the home of the Ku Klux Klan, Nathan Bedford Forrest. And so when my dad goes back to Bedford, Virginia in 1946, he was told he can't be around there wearing that uniform. Now, my dad is a sergeant, and he goes back and goes home, separates, and there at home, he's told that he can't wear that uniform there in Bedford, Virginia. My grandmother, his mother said, you need to leave here. And he left there. And I'm glad he did, because he came to Maryland. That's where he met my mother. And so I'm here now. But the point I make, that world we don't live in today because of changes that we've seen over time. And I just highlighted a few of them, things that have happened either legislatively, sometimes through court decisions, sometimes through executive orders, but leaders making the difference for change. And so we saw some of that happen throughout the 50s, the 60s. And for me, as we move forward, those things that continue to, one, cause our nation to live up to its full ideals and principles for every citizen, those are things that still need to happen. And we do that based on how we've progressed to this point and building upon those actions and those activities. So one, let's understand where we were, let's understand what we have done, and now let's proactively take steps to improve upon those things to ensure that what we have secured is never lost. And in that regard, there are things that we do that, and the more we do that, and I go back to the notion of the intellectual precedes the physical, because when we do that, eventually attitudes do change. Eventually, it becomes very easy to look at each other first as a person and not as a Black American or a white American, but as an American, as we all get the job done. But something has to kind of, every now and then, you have to have a catalyst to make that happen. Become some things just don't happen by themselves. And so those things that I call catalysts, they can come in the form of legislation. They can come in the form of executive action, sometimes a court decision. And to be sure, there sometimes they happen because someone says, hey, this is just the right thing to do. Being a God-fearing American, this is just the right thing to do. And so if there's a myriad of things that fall into that particular arena, and we look at them and we move forward in ways that in the end causes all of us to be better and secures our standing in the world, our role as a country that's based on values with integrity, character, and has at its root looking out for our fellow human being, treating everyone as you would want to be treated, so it's such that we each can realize our full value and worth as a human being. And that way, we all elevate. Now, I use this notion of team quite a bit in my discussions with youngsters and some not so youngsters. You talk about a team, and in all of my positions, I would go into my formations and say, no, as your commander, you're not here to work for me. My role as a commander is to cause what you do to be elevated. I'm here to fight for you. I'm doing all I can do to make your job more successful, to make what you do more successful, to cause you to be a success. And if I'm doing that for each of you, I want to ensure or do my best to make sure that each of you are doing that for each other as well. Because when we're all working in support for one another, then the entire team is lifted and the mission is guaranteed to be successful when that happens. That's what happens in squads. That's what happens in platoons. They're not working for themselves. They're working for their buddy. And so it doesn't matter if it's a military formation. I carried it to my private sector when I retired. How do we work to cause our teammate to be better? And if we're all working to make our teammate better, look at the power that that generates in any formation. And it guarantees success of the mission and the organization.
Hoo-ah! I love that.
Podcast over.
As you was talking, I was thinking of so many things, man, that I wanted to say. One is that, when I was a sergeant major, I wanted to put financial education into our educational system. Mm. And I want to put benefits and entitlements in there. And I went to DeAlmy one time down at, when I was a division sergeant major, 1st Armored Division. And I went to DeAlmy, and I didn't know what I didn't know. And when I got there, I realized that maybe I was saying some things that would be offensive to somebody else, that was just common discussion sometimes. Not that I was trying to be hurtful to anybody. And so when I came back out of DeAlmy, I went back and I set up an educational program within the division about equal opportunity. You know, when I deployed the 1st Armored Division with General Nash at the time, General Nash down into Bosnia, I took a few things with me. I took retention because I wanted people to reenlist when they're down there in the service. But I also took equal opportunity. And I had the divisions or brigades, they have equal opportunity classes. You know, they have downtime. We talk about that all the time. But I think we need to do something as far as education within our schooling system, within our country. And so it's not something that you learn when you're in college or when you're out in the civilian sector. You have to start at a different level to start educating people about cultures a lot earlier, I think, in this country. Sergeant Major, do you want to add anything to what we talked about there just a minute ago about changes? What kind of changes you'd like to see or maybe we missed or we want to add in there?
Yes, I think, you know, even in military and throughout our country, we're making changes. Not only, you know, just for all Americans and for Blacks in particular, but also for women in particular. You know, we made some changes in the military, for women. And then, you know, again, across our civilian sector, we're making changes for women. So, again, just getting to know each other better and like General Ward saying, elevating people so that we elevate the team to be better.
Yeah, the key to success is communications and be a good listener. If you can communicate what the issues are and listen, don't be thinking about it. Just listen to what somebody is saying. Sergeant Major, can you talk about your experience? You just mentioned about your experience as a Black woman leading soldiers, you know, throughout your career.
That's a great question. I'm not often asked that question because, and although I would, like to talk about it a lot, because like now, you know, this is for some a touchy subject. It's a sensitive subject, and people don't want to talk about, you know, Black this or Black that, or especially, you know, Black women or just women in particular, because we don't want to offend people. But I think, you know, you just say it, communication is important. But as a Black woman leading soldiers, it wasn't easy. You know, I was looked at, you know, my skin color. I was looked at because, you know, of course, I'm a woman. And more often than not, I would be the only woman in a meeting or in training. And that's due to some of the positions and units that I was in. I was harassed, talked about, mistreated. And, you know, wasn't treated well. It was treated badly sometimes. However, although I was treated badly by some, there were some great people that did not treat me bad. So I and some great leaders, peers and subordinates alike that did not do that. So I knew that I had to do my best. I needed to do my best. I needed to set the example and lead the way for all those who were watching, all those who were doubting me, and for all those who cared about me. You know, so I mean, I needed to make sure that I was prepared, you know, so that my soldiers were prepared to fight and win wars. That's our mission at the end of the day. And I needed to make sure that I did that. And I did that by being stern, by setting aggressive goals and for promotion and for assignments, because I needed to be in positions and I needed to be in places where there were less of me, where there were less Black women, right? And so I needed to be there so that I could, you know, go there and make a difference and motivate them and prepare them to be better, like General Ward said, so that I was able and be in a position to take care of America's sons and daughters, you know? And I think, you know, you have to love what you do. I absolutely love what I did. You have to be driven, determined, and you have to stay the course, just like so many of our Black ancestors. You know, they didn't give up, they didn't give in, and so many of them sacrificed, and some of them sacrificed unknowingly. And those people will live in immortality, you know, and I say that to my sons sometimes. You know, I used to say, oh, my kids, if you remember, I said at 35 and 30, and it's like, Mom, stop calling us kids, right? So now I say my sons, you know. And for my nieces and grandnieces and nephews and things, you know, I really want to be an example to my family now and to others. And hopefully I can live in immortality with the books that I write here one day. And hopefully one day there'll be somebody be in an attic and blow off that book and be able to read some of my, you know, experiences and leadership and things like that to live in immortality. And to live in immortality like a woman named Henrietta Lacks. Her name is Henrietta Lacks. And unless you're in the medical field, you probably never heard of her before. But Henrietta Lacks was a young Black mother of five. She died in 1951 after being diagnosed with aggressive cervical cancer at Johns Hopkins. She was, of course, a woman. She was Black. She had limited education, limited finances. And what makes her so special is that her cells were among dozens sent to a lab, and they were the first to ever survive and grow. And her cells were so unique and aggressive that they were later described as 1 in 3 billion. So scientists, I don't know if you guys ever heard of this, a gentleman ever heard of this, but scientists calls her cells HeLa. They took the first two letters of her first name and the first two letters of her last name. So HeLa cells were used to test polio vaccine, develop in vitro fertilization, and several other chemotherapy drugs. And her cells just continues to this day to grow and grow decade after decade. And they're grown and sold around the world. So her legacy will live on in her cells. She will live on in immortality. So much so that they even traveled to space and her cells have been embedded in a nuclear bomb. And again, I didn't know this about her, but I wanted to research and find someone that I had never heard about in the history books. The doctors even tested her family's blood. Unbeknownst to them, you know, they didn't understand what was going on back then. They had no idea. And unfortunately, to this day, some of her family members are still being torn apart by the burden of those cells. And I think we really ought to thank, think about the Lacks family as some of the greatest philanthropists in medicine of all time because it's the way the HeLa cells have contributed to breakthroughs in our world, and it's still doing that to this day. You know, Black women have had so many obstacles to go through and so many hurdles to overcome. And when I swore my oath, not really understanding it then, when I raised my hand, you know, that's a different story, but why I joined the military. But when I figured that thing out and it didn't take long for me and understood what my oath was and swearing in and why I did everything that I did. And I always took pride in to do everything in my power to always, always improve, to always exceed the Army standards in taking care of people. And it's because, you know, people like Miss Henrietta Lacks, who's often forgotten, you know, that, you know, women matter, our people matter, Black people matter, and it's not reasonable or unreasonable to demand that people are taken care of and treated fairly.
Yeah, absolutely. The, first of all, let me say thanks a lot for being on the show. I mean, you've educated me on a lot of stuff that I know a lot of stuff, a little bit, but probably not as much as you guys talked about. But I appreciate what you do and what you continue to do. And it is about coaching and teaching and mentoring and developing and educating people, all people, about the differences of our culture. Any final thoughts, anything you want to share with the audience that maybe we didn't touch on? Sir, we'll start with you. Any final thoughts you want to share?
I guess, SMA, my final word, and we could do this all day, because one, I just like being around you. You're a good man, and I just love being around you. I had a point in time before I got to my, although I can still maybe two or three, but I took my one-arm push-ups from you. I mean, I stole that from you. I mean, I was, and that to me was another great little piece to do that. You do certain things to get folks' attention. Because, you know, the first thing you got to do is you got to get somebody's attention. If you want to teach them, you got to get their attention. And doing a one-arm push-up, for me, just like I saw you, that got my attention. And so I said, well, it got my attention when I saw the SMA do it. So I think I'm going to do it. And it got attention as well. So I was a push-up guy. Then when I got to Sarmage Oxford, when I got to about the 75 point and I started to start to fade a little bit, and the youngsters were still knocking them out, I just reach over and go to one arm and knock out about 10. And then they just stop in awe. So that was all I needed to do there. So, but for me, you know, when I look at, you know, the final piece of it, you know, this notion of history is a big deal. And the notion of, you know, you don't know where you're going unless you can figure out where you came from. And so when we talk about Black history, Sergeant Major Tanya, and I kind of do that, you know, one of the things that some of my tours around the world taught me, I'd go somewhere and say, it would be General Kip, you know, a lot of our partner nations, you get addressed by your first name. And so I'd go somebody, General William or General Kip, as opposed to General Ward, my last name and whatnot. So when I say Sergeant Major Tanya, it's a sign of it. It's a term of endearment, ma'am. But when I say, hey, SMA Jack, it's because, buddy, that says we're tight.
Hoorah!
but again, you know, history, Black history is American history.
Absolutely.
And as was pointed out, you know, there's so much of what was done in American history by Americans of African descent that had not been talked about, not been appreciated. And these programs are designed to do just that. And it's not just for Black Americans, they're for all Americans. Yep. And why? So that we all better understand and know each other. And in so doing, we act as a team in a lot more effective way. And so for me, this is about how we get to know each other better. And through that better understanding, we are better able to achieve mission success, because we can take care of each other, understand each other, and we know what makes each other tick in ways that say, yeah, I know that this is important to my teammate. And if it's important to my teammate, it's important to me. Because when it's important to all of us in ways that matter, then the mission is successful and we get elevated. And by the way, the bottom line is, hey, it's the right thing to do. And I would say to all who listen, take time to understand, because through that understanding, you'll understand who they are, why they are. And when that happens, we move along in ways that we can all be very, very proud of. You know, as SMA, as you mentioned, we've come a long way. I mean, my father, what I experienced, we've come a long way. As I talk to my young grandson, you know, my children, like you, Sergeant Major Tanya, they're older. My son is 50 years old. Our daughter is 46. We've got two grandchildren. I talk to them. They don't go through what we went through, but they have their own challenges as well. And so how they grow up in this society, we all have to keep on improving the foxhole, making it better. And that's what we'll do. And that's what this is about. So as we understand our history in a more comprehensive way, know that how folks persisted over time, even in spite of treatment, but still continue to move forward because they saw themselves as doing what they did would eventually make a difference for those that would come behind them. That journey continues, and that's a journey that I'm happy to be on, and that's a journey that I'm very, very thankful, SMA, that you and your team recognize through programs such as this. So God bless you. I appreciate you, and I love you, and you can't do a gosh darn thing about it.
All right. Hey, Sergeant Major, you got anything you want to say, Sergeant Major? You hear me all pumped up here for that. Go ahead.
You know, Sergeant Major Army, General Ward, gentlemen, thank you so much. I've learned so much. It made me, it allowed me the opportunity to do some research and learn some things that I didn't know. So without you, Sergeant Major Army Tilly, I wouldn't have probably done this. Maybe I would have, but I wouldn't have done it now. So I've been educated and, you know, always a student, always willing to learn. So thank you for this today. And the gimmick, I'm taking that with me. Now, I did practice my one-arm push-up, and I've been practicing the one-arm push-up. You know, I teach an online training course, so I had them do some one-arm burpees. They weren't to standard, but we're going to keep trying that thing. So that's going to be our gimmick. But I just want to add that Black people have been a part of this country. We have helped to build this country. We have fought in every war this country has been involved in. We've managed to build a life and culture from the depths of pain, even down to our unique selves, like from Miss Henrietta Lacks. So it's important for us to celebrate. And again, Black history is American history, and we cannot escape that. So it should be celebrated at all times. Black History Month is about celebrating Black culture and appreciating accomplishments of African-American people. And I'm especially excited about how this month impacts people. It's impacted me already, February coming up, Black History Month. Now, it's the month where awareness seems to be at its highest for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And again, I'm just thankful and grateful to be here. And I also want to put a plug in. I was telling General Ward about this place, the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama. It's the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama. And it's the nation's first memorial dedicated to the legacy of enslaved Black people being terrorized by lynching. So if you have a chance to visit that place, please do so. I'm telling you, your eyes, you know, just Black history all over that place there at the National Museum Memorial for Peace and Justice. So again, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. And like General Ward said, I love you and ain't nothing you can do about it.
Well, first of all, let me say thanks for coming on the show today. You guys did a fantastic job, and I appreciate all you do and all you continue to do. You know, I'm your side. I'm here 100%. We got to talk a lot more, and we got to educate people about cultures and differences. So God bless you. Thanks to General Retired Kip Ward and Command Sergeant Major Retired Tanya Oxendine for being with us today. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you're watching Your Next Mission video podcast. And thanks for watching today. This is an important subject for all of us. Please visit our website on yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say that I hope it's a good review, but if it's not, I guess I can take that. You can also visit our partner partners there who can provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. Also, please visit our corporate partners and see all the jobs that are available. Please know we want to assist you any way we can. I always like to say that twice. Please know we want to assist you any way we can. Please follow me on all my personal social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you've enjoyed discussion with General Ward and Sergeant Major Oxendine, please click on that subscribe button below. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to General Ward and Command Sergeant Major Oxendine for joining us today. It was great having you on the show. And at this part of the show, it's always my final thoughts. And I want to just tell you today that Black History Month is important for all of us. It's about our country. I always say it's about God. But it's about learning about people or different cultures that'll make you a better person, a better leader. It's important for all of us to learn those things. I'm going to tell you a little story here real quick. I think I was in Freiburg, Germany one time, and I walked into a dining facility, and I seen a black female soldier that her hair was too long, and I said, hey, soldier, you gotta, get a haircut, cut your hair off. She said, well, Sergeant Major, I'll take my hair out tomorrow, or tonight, she said. And I said, what? And so at that point, I said, please, would you sit down with me, let's talk. And she explained to me about her hair and that she didn't wash her hair every day and she had braids in her hair and all this other stuff, things I didn't know and I didn't fully understand. You see, it's important for everybody in this country to understand, again, the cultures and the differences, so it makes us a better place for all of us. We live in a great country and we're all great people. There's no question in my mind about that, but let's learn about each other. Let's understand each other maybe just a little bit more. Again, thanks for watching. Thanks to Cloudcast Media, New Mind Studios, and of course, our four presenting sponsors, Calvary Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.